basically, we were trying to come up with recent demographics of the home educators in the country.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Van Pelt, and I live in Hamilton, Ontario, currently a PhD student at the University of Western Ontario, and also a full-time assistant professor at Redeemer University College in Hamilton. Several years ago, I was involved with the Canadian Centre for Home Education, and we did a study on which we called Home Education in Canada. Basically, we were trying to come up with recent demographics of the home educators in the country, and their motivations for choosing to homeschool, and then trying to get some indication of how the home-educated students were doing. A study similar to this had been done in the early 90s on a bit of a smaller scale by Wendy Priestness, and then shortly after that in 1994 by a researcher from the States called Brian Ray. So certainly in the last decade and a half, this is the largest study that's ever been done. We had over 1,600 families from every province and every territory across the country participate in the study, so that was very exciting. Mm-hmm. We went to great lengths to translate the study into French and try to locate French-speaking home-educating families in the province of Quebec, and also received a number of over 300, I think, families in Quebec that participated as well. So we're really excited about the participation of families all across the country. The data that we collected represented data for over 3,800 students. So that's a very large sample, and as a researcher, you're always excited to have that kind of a sample. However, there's always that concern. Have we actually tapped into a representative sample? And you and I both know there's no master list of home educating families in the country. So it's not like we could just go down a list, you know, from every province and randomly select every 10th family and invite them to participate. So we had to, you know, do our very, very best to go out and try to find families that were home educating. We used a variety of methods to locate families. We used resource suppliers, home education groups, like provincial groups. Mm-hmm. We went to conference organizers in a number of provinces and asked if they wouldn't mind distributing the questionnaire to their lists of conference attendees. We thought that might be a way of, you know, locating families that aren't necessarily members of support groups. Mm-hmm. And then we went to local groups. So again, we worked with about 26 different organizations, middle people, so to speak, who helped us distribute our questionnaire. So I'm not sure if our findings are purely representative. I don't think they are, of all home educators in the country. But again, it's a large sample. And I think we did find out a little bit about the movement.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Would you say that you had a good response, or do you think there's a lot of people that are underreported?
I think we, again, in terms of the raw numbers, the numbers are great. Mm-hmm. Yes. But there are a lot of families, for example, that choose to home educate simply because they don't want to be affiliated with educational organizations. They don't necessarily prefer or need to be affiliated with any other organizations, and have maybe a more organic approach to home educating. So of course it would be more difficult to locate those folks.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you want to just describe the demographics that your research showed.
Sure. We found that it is predominantly two-parent families that choose to home educate. When I compared my results with the 1994 study, we did find more, like an increasing incidence of single-parent families that are home educating. Mm. So it's increasing. This was an interesting finding. two-thirds of the families live off of one income of our respondents. The third that live off of two incomes, in other words, there are two parents generating income into the household, two-thirds of those, the second income provider worked less than 15 hours a week. Mm-hmm. So in the case then of a third of this third of families, you have almost two full-time income providers. And we saw some interesting stories about how people are making that work, just given the reality of needing one or more, you know, closer to two incomes. Some families are doing very creative things like working shifts, you know, trying to have schedules where one parent is home while the other parent is out generating the income. A lot of home-based businesses. Yeah, just different collaborations that way. We do find that home educators are more highly educated than the regular population. If we would compare it to the general Canadian public, I think it was almost 80% had more than a high school education, perhaps not completed a university degree. But so certainly, you know, high incidence of some college or university education. Income level, of course, compared to other two-parent family households in the country, the income was lower. And I think we can understand why. That's to free up the time that's required for parents to invest in their children via home educating. There just isn't the time to be out there generating the income. Committed spiritually, families, seems like in a lot of the cases, religion does play an important role in their lives. I'm currently involved in another study, and we're just analyzing the results right now, and I'm finding that the results match up with what we found in 2004 with the home educating families. It does seem that people are increasingly spiritual, but less incidence of affiliation with specific religious organizations. So there does seem to certainly be this sense of people having religious, spiritual, or faith commitments, and that is also part of what they hope to share with their children. And then we can move in. The other part of our study was, why do parents choose to home educate? And that was one of the things that we found, that people do want to share their faith with their children, and they found that by being with them more, or by the curriculum that they might choose or their approach to education, they had a more opportunity to share that sort of worldview or faith or spiritual orientation with their children than they might have opportunity to do should they enroll in a school setting.
So that was an important reason.
The other reason this was fascinating for me to see sort of bubble up to the top was the desire for an enhanced family life, increased relationship between parents but also between siblings. And parents are finding that the time spent together also increases the sibling-to-sibling contact and the relationships that way. So strong familial reasons to home educate. We tried to get into, how do people go about home educating? One of the original critiques about home education, and you've probably thought about this yourself, is that these poor children are under-socialized or poorly socialized, or what about socialization? And I think when people ask that question, they have a notion of children, parents staying home, being in the home, and sitting at the kitchen table, working madly through workbooks, and that compromising all of their education. I think that's what people are thinking about when they ask that question. So one way of coming up with some sort of an answer to that what about socialization question is to say, okay, are these children actually going outside of the home for any activities? And for anyone who's been involved in home education, you know how silly that is. Mm. Of course the children are outside, and of course it's because of this sort of possibility for all sorts of collaborative experiences that people choose to home educate. But nevertheless, we had to somehow get at that through a questionnaire. So we asked parents, we gave quite a large checklist and said, if your kids are involved in any of these activities outside of the home, would you please check them off? And we found that on average, the children were involved in 8 types of activities outside of the home. I had some children involved in up to 19 activities outside of the home. So, I mean, you name the extracurricular, those kids were involved in it, okay?
Right.
And some of the extracurriculars might have been a 1 or 2 week summer camp. Another one would be weekly participation in a guiding scout or guiding program. Another one might be a 10-week involvement in a swimming lesson. So you can't say it's 8 types of activity per week, but it's 8 types of different sorts of activities. If I hear some of the stories from the 80s, people actually kept their kids in between 9 and 3 because they were worried about how they would be viewed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always that chance of the truancy officer showing up. And certainly, since the change in the policy in 2002, we don't see home educators educating in fear anymore. I mean, that's the Ontario policy change.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been this legislative policy acceptance of home educating. But also I think a general societal awareness that this is a valid educational option, and therefore I think home educators, you know, are just really tapping into the communities in which they live and the opportunities for education outside of the home. The other thing is I've noticed, for example, a local art gallery offers programs during the day specifically geared to home educated students. So clearly there are education providers that are seeing this group of students as a potential client and designing programs to suit their needs. So there's more out there for these students in terms of organized activities than there might have been 15 or 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Noam Chomsky. You're listening to CFMU 93.3.
I just wanted to jump back again because the whole notion that sometimes you get people saying that homeschooling is only elite families do it. And obviously your demographics have shown that that's not the case, right? I mean, they have lower income, right? But higher education. But so what would you ever comment on that?
Yes, I would. I think perhaps if it would depend on how the person might be defining elite. I mean, we do look at education, level of education. We look at the types of employment that parents have, like the type of status of the job, and then we look at income level.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at simply income, these are not elite. These are actually struggling families,
mm-hmm.
in terms of having to be resourceful and probably compromising on some of the material items that other families with the same education level or perhaps even the same employment status positions would have. So not elite in terms of material possessions or income, but probably well-grounded in terms of education. And hard to say the employment. I didn't sort that out well enough.
Mm-hmm.
We had parents select the type of job that they were involved in, but I couldn't anchor that down well enough.
You mentioned that 80% are Christian as well. Do you want to just talk about that as a region of preference?
Definitely Christian families would be more highly represented than, let's say, Muslim families, although we certainly did work with a group of Muslim home educators in Toronto, and they participated in our study. But, yeah, I mean, that's the demographic, and it's all forms of Christianity, from, you know, the sort of nominally committed to the very committed, and then, yeah, from the whole spectrum, Protestant through to Catholic.
Right, okay. And then one other question was about when kids get to university, or, well, actually, when they're planning or preparing for university. Did you do any much with youth, or was it mostly the parents? Did you get any feedback?
We did a very exciting bit in our study. The last section of the questionnaire, I think I had 7 or 8 sections in the questionnaire. The last section of the questionnaire was we asked if families had any older siblings that had already graduated or moved on from being home educated and had moved into their adult lives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I didn't specifically go out to find adults that had been home educated, but it was sort of a by-the-way thing. We wanted to try to find some preliminary data on young Canadian adults that had been home educated and about their experiences and what they were up to now. So we had 183 Canadian young adults. Their average age was just under 21. So these are young adults.
Yes.
And we asked them what they were up to. I believe it was about 96% had moved on following their home education experience. I'm going to use the word graduated in a broad sense.
Mm-hmm.
Had moved on either to post-secondary or to employment experiences. We found that 6.7% had used some sort of social assistance at some point in their adult lives for reasons other than maternity.
Mm-hmm.
none had been or were using any kind of a welfare kind of assistance program at that point. A lot of cross-cultural experiences. 40% of these 183 respondents said that they had lived in cross-cultural settings. So I think that's just fascinating because it shows some sort of a breadth of awareness and experience of these students.
What do you mean by cross-cultural?
Well, that's the thing. I let respondents interpret that term in any way that they wanted to.
Yeah.
But in my future work, which I'm hoping will be with Canadian adults that have been home educated, I definitely want to unpack that. I think for one thing, when I look at some home educated children that I know, they read extensively. So they've had a wide variety of contact with people from different places, different times, different experiences than their own. So through their literary access to a variety of cultures, I think that perhaps they have more of a sensitivity to other cultures.
Wow.
This is just my trying to make sense of what this might be about. So there's something about a wide cross-cultural awareness that, again, those who would say level critiques about the isolation of home educated child, this seemed to show that it's perhaps exactly the opposite. Yeah, so I really hope, as I say in my doctoral work, to unpack some of that. And I hope to do more extensive interviewing of these adults rather than just relying on a questionnaire format. There's so much potential in looking at home education. We've only just tapped into the surface here. I wonder what home education, what these families, we think maybe there are 60 to 80,000 children in the country that are home educated right now. What do their successes and perhaps failures have to say about our institutionalized systems of education? And I think it'll be interesting over the next years to look at that. I mean, we're living at a wonderful time technologically in which education can be delivered in a diversity of ways. Much more just global potential for our children. And I think Canadian home educators, certainly home educators across the world, have pointed by their success to the fact that education can be delivered in a variety of settings.
Mm-hmm.
And just to think about that entire question about the institution and education and how we might be able to broaden what it is that we understand to be the who ought to be the deliverer of education. If you would ask me what the greatest weakness is, it really is the amount of time that is required from parents. And of course that's its strength, because it's a time for parents and children just to grow and flourish together and serve their communities and be in their communities. It also is its weakness. It takes so much parental, not only energy and investment, but also the time it takes to be with the children. And sometimes there are compromises then on how the family can, or certainly the parents can be out there contributing in terms of their own employment. And then there's the whole question about how universities are accepting home-educated students. And we see more and more acceptance of that year by year as university registrar offices are developing their own policies for accepting students that have been home-educated. And if I had to sum that up in general, there's definitely been more acceptance and more awareness of these students and the strengths that they do bring as self-directed and self-energized learners into the university years. So lots more to think about, lots more to look at, but I think these are very positive times for home-educated students, and I think these are positive times for education in general as educators and education systems look at how they can maximize the potential of a diversity of mechanisms for delivering education.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. And that's what the teacher said to me. That's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that... I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today, that's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
Listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
My name's Monica, and I'm unschooling a five-year-old and sending a teenager to school. And I'm a struggling librarian in BC. I was on the Hit Mama bulletin boards 10, 12 years ago. That was when the teenager was about 3 years old. There were all sorts of women on there who unschooled, homeschooled, you know, anarchists, just everything. It's mostly, politically active, like progressive moms. That's where I heard about it, and I wasn't overly impressed, which is funny because, you know, looking back, you know, I should have been, especially since I was so unhappy in school. And the teenager's father insisted that he go to prep schools, so he had quite an odd school experience. He always loved it, so we didn't have a bad school experience. And then the five-year-old's very full of energy and very social. So I thought he would be a good candidate for going to school and being surrounded by kids. And then he went for about 8 weeks, maybe 7 weeks, to kindergarten. And immediately he said that he was a bad kid, and it turned out the other kids were referring to him as the bad kid. And his self-esteem just took a dive, and he was nothing but self-esteem before. So we had, you know, just a really bad experience, and the school was calling us in, you know, for meetings every day, and so that was definitely a catalyst.
As a same-sex couple, a minority within a minority, what kind of challenges do you face?
I think most all of my unschooling community is online, so it doesn't really come up. Also, being on a small island, we live on a small island that's a lot of musicians and artists. There's no queer community, so, you know, basically a hippie artist community,
yeah.
So we really don't show up much on the radar here.
Yeah, so your community is kind of a community that's already quite alternative or maybe more progressive, that they don't...
Yeah, they've seen odder things, for sure. The five-year-old hasn't really registered it, and I think partly that's going to school. When the teenager was in kindergarten, he came home, and in the first day of kindergarten, the teacher had explained to everyone that he had two moms, or he had explained that he had two moms. And there were tears from the other kids because, you know, moms are great and they wanted two moms. So he was, you know, aware of it. He's also just a totally different person, very cautious socially. Where the five-year-old, you know, I think would laugh at anybody who told him that was strange or, you know. I'm aware that a lot of homeschoolers are coming from a Christian fundamentalist background, and that's not the family, but that was the community that I grew up in. So I know my way around that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a difference maybe between homeschooling and unschooling. Unschoolers tend to be a little more, I don't know, open-minded,
yeah,
for lack of a better word. They're already used to questioning.
I mean, it's important to have friends that have a similar family kind of situation.
The teenager, I introduced him to Collage. It's Collage. And they have like a newsletter, and they talk to each other, and I think they have get-togethers. But we were living in Portland at the time, and there were other kids in his prep school that had same-sex parents. So that made a big difference, living in a city, and, you know, it wasn't quite the big deal. So we went out of our way to, you know, introduce him to similar families, but it wasn't an issue for him, so he wasn't overly interested. The 5-year-old of his probably 3 best friends, 2 of the families have both parents, and 1 has just the mom. And so we talk about, you know, all the different families, but also the people next door who are more the Christian fundamentalists are homeschooling, and they don't really interact with us, but they don't really interact with anyone. So it's not, I took it personally at first, but I don't think it is. So he knows that there's that, you know, whatever that is, there it is next door. And then the people around the corner, she's going to be homeschooling this year. She's got like a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Wow, the boom of homeschooling around here.
Yeah, and there's a lot on the island, but not really well organized. But it's gotten to the point that when I meet somebody, I don't assume that they're going to school, because it seems as likely as not that they're homeschooling in some way. And in fact, when we came here, the 5-year-old was had just turned 2, and everybody kept asking if we were going to homeschool, and I was like, what is with that? I didn't really get it, but I think it's just because it's such a common choice here.
That's really an exceptional situation. I mean, you know, you don't get that.
Yeah, I understand there was quite a strong community, and then the local school district made kind of a satellite building organization for the homeschoolers. And I was talking to somebody who's been here forever, raising like 8 kids, and she said that kind of broke up the homeschooling community because a lot of them went with this one group, which now they have to have lesson plans, and, you know, they spend some of their time at home or out in the community, and then some of their time in this building. But it's really just an offshoot of the public school. They're enrolled with the public school. So I think that's made things, perhaps, according to her, to this one woman, that made things kind of tricky. We get to demonstrate our values more, and it's funny because the people next door who, you know, keep to themselves, I know, feel the same way, like their child started to talk back to them, is how the father explained it to me. So they pulled her out of school. And they're concerned, you know, with that she not have humanist and you know, not mixed with non-Christians and that sort of thing. And it's not that different, really, from the fact that I want him to, our values, which are, you know, respecting people regardless of their age or appearance and that sort of thing. So really it's just underlining our values rather than limit the exposure to different people, which our neighbors are doing. I feel like we're expanding that because he's not stuck in school all day, so we can go out and do things.
Down, down, dee dum dum. get knocked down and don't get up again. Yo, I'm a silly ass bitch.
Come on, I mean, man, we can talk about this.
Come on, I'm a girl, I'll still kick your ass.
The end.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.